Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. I'm Neil Manthorpe, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, former England fast bowler Steve Harmison, to look back at round 7 of the County Championship. We'll discuss that remarkable 190 for 45-year-old Darren Stevens, and won't we discuss it? So, confirmation of the excellent form of England's Rory Burns, and we'll also be joined by Nottinghamshire's seamer Luke Fletcher after his match figures of 10 for 57 in their win over Worcestershire, the only win of round 7. As well as that, we'll hear from Kane Williamson, the head of New Zealand's series against England, and discuss how the inter series could affect the resumption of the IPL. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Army, I've got two things to say to you. First up, one is Darren Stevens, and the other is the fans are back.
The fans are back, yes. It was great to see them back. I must admit, there must be. You will see die-hard fans. You've got to say it. Die-hard fans are back. If you sat and watched cricket this week inside the stadium, you are a die-hard fan because it's been raining, it's been freezing. And I'll fair play to you. You've been waiting for it for a year. So if you have been to the cricket this week, I'm sure you've enjoyed it. And it's great to have you back. And Darren Stevens, what more can we say? We had him on a few weeks ago, talking about getting 100 just before his 45th birthday. Well, what an innings. What an innings. I've been involved in some last wicket partnerships when you bat for long periods of time with, you know, balls fist. You don't get many runs in the runs column. And that's what young Cummins has done. Getting Darren Stevens, 190. He just keeps defying logic. 45-year-old. Not 5-year-old and playing a bit part. 45-year-old. He got 190. And he got Marnus Labuschagne out again. It just seems an easy game. Just get him into the test matches in the Ashes. Because I'd imagine Marnus Labuschagne, when he comes to playing against England in the Ashes, he's going to be one of the highlights and the big hitters that England will be looking to get out. So Darren Stevens can have a quiet conversation with some of the England bowlers just to give them a little bit of a tip on how to get him out. Because that's twice now, LBW Stevens, Marnus Labuschagne, second best batsman in the world at this minute in time.
Yeah,
it's an easy game when you're 45, isn't it?
Let's start with Surrey against Manx, which also really caught my attention, and I thought that was an excellent game of cricket. It was. I mean, there are lots of features that stood out. It was nice to see Peter Hanscom finding some form. He scored 70, captaining Middlesex, which is more than he scored in 7 innings before that. He was averaging 7, but they set up the game really nicely, and I mean, at 200 for 2, Middlesex looked like they were going to win it, but they ran out of steam, finishing on 250 for 6. Lots of good stuff there. 100 for Rory Burns. And an amazing collapse from Surrey, who put on 135 for the first wicket between Burns and Stoneman in the first innings before collapsing to 190, another quirky stat. That's the second highest opening partnership in the history of the county championship for a team that was then bowled out for less than 200.
Wow.
Lots of things that stood out in that game.
They did, yeah. And I'm, again, like I said, it's nice to see Burns. He got 60 in the first inning. If I was Tim Murtagh, I'd be disappointed not to get one of the two LBW decisions. You know, that's a little bit of luck you need sometimes when it comes to Burns. And then getting 100, he looked good. He looked accomplished in the second innings. I really enjoyed Middlesex bowling attack. I've seen Helm and heard about young Tom Helm quite a bit, but I think this kid's got something. He was bowling about 84 mile an hour. There's a couple of little things that potentially I think he could do to advance his action and pierce-wise. He might get a yard of pierce, 6 foot. 4'4", 6'5", big tall lad, hit the deck hard. He got 3 wickets and thought he bowled nicely. And I thought young Blake Cullen, he looks about 10 years old. He looks about 10 years old and he needs a good meal, but I tell you what, he can bowl. So they only got 3 wickets each, but little things like that just stood out for me. You know, the young players on TV wanting to make their mark, possibly a little bit nervous first up, because the cameras are on, and then once they settled in, they bowled beautifully. So, you know, little things like that. I enjoyed Amla again. Hashim Amla, little glimpses in the second innings, trying to set the game up. Ollie Pope with 37 not out, trying to set the game up. Pope and Burns getting themselves ready for that first test match. Good signs for England.
And, yeah, just to confirm, Rory Burns, 50 for the seventh time. He's now got 554 runs. At 61 with 106 50s, and the 50 in both innings for Mark Stoneman as well. Kemar Roach took 9 for Surrey in his last game. And we must mention Nick Gubbins' 100, yeah. But Middlesex target was 290 for 6. Middlesex have been shorter on runs than any other county. So, batsmen feed off each other, don't they? He made 124 and Hanscombe 70. So hopefully they'll begin to find some form.
Yeah, it's a corner that needed to be turned. You know, Middlesex were closely staring at this and thinking, you know what, where's our next run coming from? Being in that position from a bowling point of view in the wickets. But, you know, Middlesex from a batting point of view, we spoke a week for the last 3 weeks on it needs to turn. And possibly a little glimpse in that second innings when they had a total to chase, turn into a one-day game, get the momentum going, and fingers crossed that they'll do that for the next. But Gubbins, another one, youngish English batsman, been talked about for the last couple of years, potentially knocking on the England door, a couple of academy. And it's nice to see him getting some runs, and Hanscombe was desperately needed. When your captain can't score a run, you know, when you're trying to deliver your message and, you know, have a go at your players, it's very, very difficult to do that from a position of no runs on the board. So, you know, it'll be good signs for Middlesex.
Okay, really interesting game here as well, again, between Hampshire and Leicestershire. What makes me laugh is that Hampshire took 12 points from it and Leicestershire took 11. One yeah. point difference. But if that had been a football game, Hampshire would have won it 7-0. So Hampshire have been bowled out for 233. Who'd have thought that would be a good score? But then Kyle Abbott, with his third consecutive fifer, knocks Leicestershire over for 84. And it was a 10th wicket stand of 30, which saved the follow-on. They saved it by one run. Hampshire then forfeited their second innings. That doesn't happen very often these days. And left Leicester 150 in 22 overs. Now, I know that you're not going to be desperately tempted by that when you've just been knocked over for 84. But I really did expect them to go for it, even just two or three down, you know. But I guess 152, bit steep, difficult conditions, not great light. What did you think of it?
No, I thought they would have had a go. I didn't think they had too much to lose. You know, Hampshire have tried to set the game up because they are within touching distance of the top two to be in Division One to contest for the Bob Willis Trophy at the end of the year. So, and there will be, you know, the older cynic going to go and forfeiting and is in the spirit of the game. You're trying to win a cricket match. For me, I've got no problem with that. Contriving two captains having a go, put their heads together to try and get an outcome, risk losing to potentially winning if you need to win, which Hampshire did. So I didn't have a problem with that. I thought Leicester would have had a go. You know, like you said, even if you get up, you're only going to be 4, 5, 6 overs max, if that. So I'm disappointed that Leicester didn't have a proper at it. But it's probably done Hampshire a favour getting them points on the board, drawn with everybody else. And they're still within touching distance, but you can see why they tried to what they did. And fair play to James Vince for doing that. He gave a real good go to try and get his team in the top two by winning cricket matches.
And finally, Somerset against Gloucestershire, also finishing in a draw, although Somerset will feel pretty hard done by, having recovered to 300 for eight, more runs for skipper Tom Abel, 132 not out, and Lewis Gregory making a valuable half century at number nine. They then reduced Gloucestershire to 27 for six. So every reason for them to believe that they were robbed of a few more points by the rain. Somerset looking good, just, you know, smooth as ever.
Yeah, smooth as ever. The look is the one thing Somerset have always had runs in them. They've always, down at Taunton, they've always had runs in them. Can they get 20 wickets enough times to force a victory? Yes, it was completely decimated by the rain. But good signs for England. Craig Overton had last game off. Didn't really hurt him too much because the last game they got rained off and he wouldn't have bowled that much anyway. But this time he's come. He's had a little bit of a run out. Bowled seven overs, 4 for 16. Good signs for England. It puts another little spanner in the work for the selection panel for that first test match against New Zealand. We want to play Wood, Anderson and Broad, but with Leach as well, can we play four number 10s? Do we need somebody that can score some runs and get wickets, an Ollie Robinson or a Craig Overton, because the more, you know, the better with the bat? Well, Craig Overton's telling you that if it comes down to wickets, I'm in decent form. He's played six matches and got 36. So, and he hasn't really exerted himself this week. So, good sign for England, that one.
There does seem to be a feeling that Ollie Robinson is quite a long way ahead of Overton in the pecking order. Yeah. Is that right? I find that quite surprising.
Yeah, I think so. I think he is. I'm not sure if that's... He was in the bubble for a little bit longer. They've had a look at Craig Overton, whether they've made their mind up or they're not sure. Potentially more suited to, you know, the Australian trip rather than the English summer. Robinson pitches up a little bit more. Not sure if he's any quicker than Overton. I think they'll be round about similar speeds. I think Craig's probably a better batsman than Ollie, but just shading it. I think he's ahead of him because I think England probably want to have a look at him. Let's have a look at him when the lights are on, when the cameras are on, when the crowd's in, when the media's there and the newspapers and, you know, the TV are. You know, we've seen what Craig Overton's got. Have we seen what Ollie Robinson's got? No, that's why I think he's just slightly ahead of them. But then both of them at this minute in time, if they get selected for England, they're in bang, they're right in banging form. So, you know, fair play and good on them for doing that.
Overton's 36 wickets this season have come at just 12.8. And I mentioned Tom Abel, 529 runs at an average of 66 for the Somerset captain. He's also faced over 1,000 balls. Nottinghamshire were able to blow away Worcestershire to win by an innings and 150 runs, thanks largely to 10 wickets in the match for Luke Fletcher, who joins us now on the Cricket Collective. Figures of 7 for 37 in the first innings and 3 for 20, 10 for 57. Those are quite some numbers, Fletch. And well done for winning between the rain, the only win in out of eight matches.
I know, it was crazy. I don't think we quite believed ourselves until we got ourselves six wickets on the night of day three, and then we thought, you know, we've got a sniff of this.
I just wanted to say the turnaround has been unbelievable. Nottinghamshire didn't win a game for a couple of years, and didn't start this season particularly convincingly. You've now won three in a row, two by an innings and one by 310 runs.
I know, it's just crazy. I mean, that's sport for you, isn't it? We came close against Warwickshire at Trent Bridge early in the season, and they sort of just picked us, but we've been playing well, and we just needed to get over the line that first time. And then, you know, once you get a bit of confidence around the squad and lads taking wickets and batters standing up and scoring hundreds, you know, it's this momentum thing, into, you know, you win one, two, three, and, you know, hopefully it can go on for all season now.
And the pre-season, Fletch, is a bit different because you're obviously with the COVID stuff, and it seemed the first couple of games, the wickets were flat because it hadn't rained for 6 weeks. And all of a sudden, there's a bit of rain around. Ball's doing a bit. Bowlers seem to have a little bit more juice in the legs, and the wickets are coming quite regularly.
Well, the first game, Harvey, I bowled 47 overs at Trent Bridge against Durham, and I thought, this is ridiculous. Like, in April, you know, you normally bowl one, maybe two spells max in innings, don't you? And that's it. So then I thought, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this for a long time. You know, I'm in my last year contract. shall I just, you know, make this the last year? Because 47 overs in April at Trent Bridge is crazy. But you're dead right, mate. You know, the weather's come in and all of a sudden it started to swing and nip around a bit more. So, yeah, I've definitely enjoyed the last two or three weeks, but it didn't start off too well.
And you're good mates with him, but how good is it to have Stuart Broad not only open the ball at the other end, but actually in the team, in your team? Opposition are looking across the dressing room, one of the best players that's ever to play for England, and he's playing for Notts, and he's doing what he does for England for Notts.
I know, and to be fair, I've been lucky. We both signed the same year, so I've played with him for a while now. But some of the younger lads in the dressing room, even like, you know, with rain delays, everyone's just hanging off every word that Broad is saying. He's telling us stories about certain games. It's amazing to have him around. And actually, he loves playing for Notts and he gives 110% like he does for England. He ran in all day yesterday. Me and him, we bowled for a whole session yesterday because we needed to get the four wickets and then, you know, the change around. So I went again with the new ball. Broadie went again after lunch. I sat down for 40 minutes. I couldn't get up. I had a bit of chicken pasta and I couldn't move, but he ran in again. But he's just a legend. He's just a great bloke. And like you say, you know, one of the best bowlers ever to play the game. And he's opening the bowl at the other end to me. So it's amazing. And he just loves the club as well, which is always handy.
You're sitting with 31 wickets this season, an average of 11, I think it is, if my my stats have got it right. You mentioned 13 years. We've been talking about in the first part of the show about Darren Stevens playing at 45. Can you see Luke Fletcher playing another 13 seasons to get somewhere near Stevens?
It seems a long way off, doesn't it? But I suppose, never say never, but I'd say it's highly unlikely. What I would say is I'm probably at the best point in my career, which is weird because normally when you get to 32, 33, everyone's right and you're off, aren't they? They're saying, you know, you're a fast bowler, you've been done in a couple of years. But I think that sportsmen have changed now. You know, look at Jimmy and Broadie. I know they are natural athletes and I'm not an athlete at all, to be honest, but it's different now, you know, these fitness coaches, two physios, two fitness coaches, all sorts. Now, you know, the facilities and things like that, nutritionists and all that. I don't get me wrong, I don't follow it that well, but you've got more of a chance to stay in the game for a bit longer, yeah.
How many times have you said to the fitness coach, look at my wicket column? I used to do that all the time when you say, go on the gym, and I'm like, no. Well, it'll improve you. Look at my wicket column. I'm quite happy where my body's at.
I've had that battle for years, yeah. You know, I pride myself on being on the park, really. Exactly. Touch wood, I've not had too many nasty times away. You know what I mean? I hate talking about injuries, but... I pride myself on being on the park, so I'm not too worried what my yo-yo test is, but I'm definitely more worried about my wickets column, that is for sure.
You ought to give credit to the batsmen for setting it up. We haven't mentioned them yet. They put 400 for 5 on the board in pretty quick time with Ben Duckett's 177 and the captain in the runs again.
Well, exactly, yeah. We would never have been able to win that game if we'd have been rolled out for 230. 240, 250, something like that, then, you know, we just wouldn't have had enough time in the game. So that massively set it up. And, I mean, Mullaney, when he went in, I think he went in and hit two sixes in his first 10 balls. And he just sort of took the game away then. And that obviously gave us the time that night to bowl 18 overs, I think. Because sometimes at night, if you bowl 7 or 8 overs, I was talking to Broadie about this, you sort of force it because you're like desperate to get wickets. Was as you have like an hour and a half, 18 overs, you can sort of settle in, can't you? And get, you know, you settle into a bit of a rhythm. And then, we've had it this season already against Derby, where we got them 8 down in like 16, 17 overs. So it's a nice time to bowl, but yeah, definitely settled by the batters. You know, Duckett and Mullaney with top draw. And Lyndon James as well, who you probably don't know too much about, is a young lad, a young all-rounder who's, you know, he's having a great start to the season. So he's a good lad to keep an eye on.
And he's sitting top of the league. One game in hand on Essex, who are second. You know, and Man has mentioned 3 wins in a row now. Is this, you know, you feel as though you can beat anybody, especially at Trent Bridge?
Well, yeah, we just beat Essex last week or the week before. We had a break last week. Yeah, we hammered them in that game at Trent Bridge. So the confidence is high at the minute. The only thing is now that Broadie leaves to go in that test bubble. So, you know, there's a spot open for someone to come in. But, I mean, we got Brett Hutton, Zach Chappell, Jake Ball, who won't come back yet, Bawley, but eventually in the next few weeks, you know, that spot's got to get filled. So that's the challenge for us now. But definitely the way we're playing. I mean, our opening batters in Haseeb Ahmed and Ben Slater have been the best openers we've had at the club since I've been here, really. We've always really struggled at the top of the order. So it's got a nice feel about it at the minute. So I don't want to say too much, but yeah, hopefully we can make hay while the confidence is high.
But with Stuart setting the example, how much do the young lads just feed off that? And you expect, even if you take Stuart out, the standards he's been setting in your group now are at such a point where it should just carry on.
Exactly. So I think the lads now who are looking from outside the first team or in the second team are expected to bowl at a level where, you know that's the sort of standard we're at in the first team cricket. We get judged on a lot of things now. It'd probably be different to when you play, but there's a thing at Trent which is called the bar. It's the business area. Mm. So we try and make sure we're like a high percentage, like in the 70 to 80% around the business area. The analyst does all the work. So you've pretty much judged on every ball now. So there's the standard is high, and especially when you come to Trent Bridge and there's a bit of pace in the wicket and there's a bit of grass there, you want to make sure you're up on your length. A lot of teams come and see the ball flying through and they bang it in, and they don't, it looks good, but it's not really effective. But the real skillful bowlers who bowl well at Trent Bridge, they pitch the ball up there, like your Jimmy Anderson's. I mean, Graham Onion's got 9 for against us. I don't know if you played that game. He got 9 for and ran me out. But no, yeah, I mean, the standards are set high now, and we need to make sure we maintain it through the whole season. And the nice thing is we have got a squad of bowlers that can hopefully go all the way, because we haven't had that in the past. You get a couple of niggles and a few younger lads are coming in and are not quite ready. Now there's a good squad of bowlers around.
Congratulations, Luke. Well done. I mean, not just to you for the 10 for 57, but the extraordinary turnaround in form for Notts. And well, as I said, you didn't start the season convincingly, but my goodness me, you're the form team now. So congratulations. Thank you. Going.
Cheers, thanks. Cheers, lad. Thank you.
Many thanks to Luke Fletcher. As I said, one of the game's great characters. Just a quick mention there for Jake Libby, who continues to be in the runs. Although Worcestershire got thrashed, the opener has moved now to 611 runs, just 13 off the pace setter Durham's David Beddingham. He's also faced more deliveries than anyone else. Talking of Durham, Derbyshire drew with Durham. And what stood out for you, Harmy? It wasn't nothing particularly eye-catching, was there? Durham,
not really. No.
I was watching Cameron Bancroft with a very, very slow start to his innings. But anything else caught your eye? Matt Critchley in the runs Bancroft and wickets.
Bancroft batted for a while. He's batted for a long time, actually. Nearly 140 balls for his 39. Getting used to back into English conditions. A little bit of pressure on him because he opened his mouth during the week and caused a little bit of controversy, which I'm sure his four fast bowlers at home when they get back to Sheffield Shield, if they ever get back Cameron Bancroft, even at the Wacker where he plays his home cricket, I don't think Cameron's going to get many in his half when the big fast bowlers get anywhere near him. But that's another story again. Nothing happened in the game, really. Look at it. Two positive things. Durham, again, we spoke to Chris Rushworth, very emotional last week, got his six for again on a seeming friendly wicket. And the good thing for me, Mark Wood's getting overs under his belt. Wood's getting overs under his belt. He got 2 for 84, not bothered about the 2 or the 84. He bowled 23 overs, and I think that's a good number for Mark to get in an innings, and he keeps have to build on that, and hopefully he's another one just getting himself ready to put a hand up for selection for a couple of weeks' time when the first test match comes around. But apart from that, there wasn't much happening in the game other than, by all accounts, the members of Derbyshire were very, very cold and very, very windswept and wet throughout the whole 4 days, because it looked, from the footage that I've seen, that it was very, very cold in Derbyshire. Very, very cold.
It was, at least the new ground is a bit more secluded than the old racecourse ground before they built those windbreaks. But yeah, just a quick mention to Matt Critchley, who just continues to produce numbers, 49 and another 3 wickets, 561 runs at 51 and 19 wickets with his leg breaks at 33. So, we've mentioned him, just a solid, solid, reliable performer. And finally, in this section, Essex draw with Warwickshire. Very little play possible. 50s for Sir Alistair and Ryan Tender-Scarter. Warwickshire bowled out for 166. Dom Sibley, those are important runs, just 43 of them. But, he's shown that the finger is fully recovered and He spent some valuable time at the crease. Peter Siddle, 6-for-38. He's still going well.
Yeah, going very well. I think he went past 650 first-class wickets. And for Australian, bear in mind, the Australians don't play a lot of first-class cricket. That's a good number. That's a big number. Good to see Siddle running in and keep going well. The Dominic Sibley one was the balls first, 120 balls first. That's a good number of balls first, time in the middle, getting used to being back out there, giving the finger a good test, especially against a Peter Siddle, because even though, you know, Peter's getting on a little bit, he still hits the splice hard. He still bowls a heavy ball into that sort of good length. So, you know, fair play to Sibley. 50 for Tim Bresnan as well, and overs for Ollie Stone. So as much as there wasn't a great deal happening in the game, there were some important runouts for some key people for England.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and England fast bowler Steve Harmison. Still to come, we'll discuss the final few results from the County Championship, including that record-breaking week for Kent's Darren Stevens. This is the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 and our review of Round 7 of the County Championship. If you missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can always listen back to the podcast, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. I've been looking forward to this. Kent against Glamorgan. Darren Stevens, we've all probably got our favourite stat and our favourite record that he broke amongst the dozens, it seems. But the bare facts of it are 190 off 149 balls, 15 fours, 15 sixes. Kent were 80 for 5 when he walked to the crease, very soon to be 120 for 8. He gets them to 307 all out. He then dismisses, as you heard Harmy say in the first part of the show, Manus Labuschagne for the second time this season. It just the highlights package of Darren Stevens' innings. I have made sure that I've kept it on my hard drive because whenever I'm feeling a bit bleak or a bit blue, I'm going to get it out and watch it. I mean, it was just absolutely phenomenal. I said we've all got our favourite numbers, probably got your favourite shots as well. What comes to mind first of all?
Unbelievable, man. The guy is still playing at 45. That's the biggest stat. The hunger for the game at 45. Not just to stand there and bat and belt it, but to come up and bowl as well. Darren Stevens has got 19 wickets. 19 wickets, an average of 20 at 45-year-old. It's just phenomenal. You know, the 190, watching some of the shots I've seen, and I've been on the end of that in one-day cricket. Darren's got the better of me a couple of times, especially at the St. Lawrence Ground at Kent. I remember one game he went berserk. You just can't bowl at him. He gets right across. He plays a short ball so well. And when he's in his disruptive mode, he gets himself in a position where he just plays baseball star. And he's very, very difficult to bowl. But the fun start, the 166, I think he put on with Miguel Cummins, and he had one off 60 balls or something. It was just frightening. I've been in that situation before as a tail ender, I remember once putting 50 on my Marcus Juskovic, and he came up to me and said, "Yeah, keep going, keep, yeah, keep trying to hit it." And I looked at the scoreboard, and I didn't have a run. I didn't have any. I think one. I put on one with Fred, Andrew Flintoff. I think 99 and 101. I think when he belted Nintini, and then Mackay Nintini got 10 for it at Lords on that great game, but he got 10 for like 200. Fred got 140, and I was at the non-strikers end for the majority of Andrew's innings. And it's just breathtaking. It's brilliant to watch. And you just look at the bowlers thinking, "What? Where am I going to bowl here?" And then you look at the fielders and they're just forever just, it's like watching a tennis match. They're just forever looking into the air. So what more can you say about Darren Stevens? You spoke to him a couple of weeks ago and he just seems to love the game. It's how long can he go on for? But you know, Kent need him because he seems to be holding that team together, because the rest of them, I think they need to look at their elder statesmen and really look at themselves and think, well, we're letting him down because they're not putting runs on the board and teams are getting them out far, far too cheaply. So they need to start booking their ideas up the top six, because they can't keep waiting for a 45-year-old to get you out of trouble.
Of the 214 runs that were scored at the wicket while Stevens was there, he scored 190, which is the highest percentage of runs scored while a batsman has been at the crease in the history of first-class cricket. In the history of first-class cricket. 190 out of 214. In second place, by the way, Gert Snyman for Namibia against Kenya in 2008. But this number you'll love, Harmy. Most sixes scored by a bat in first-class cricket, most sixes in an innings by a batsman 40-plus. Not 45-plus, 40-plus. 15 is the record held by Darren Stevens. 15. In second place, Harry Makepeace in 1926, Lancashire against Worcestershire, 10.
And with them bats as well. Yeah, 10 sixes with the bats that they used in in the 1900s. It's you could hardly get the ball off the square. But I bet you if you went down that list, Darren Stevens would be on that list quite a few times, because I'd imagine after the age of 40, he's got plenty of hundreds after the age of 40, and he hits sixes.
He's in third place. Do you remember the 100 he scored against Yorkshire in 2019? 9 sixes. Yes. So he's in third place.
Yes. It's phenomenal and it's brilliant. Steve, I'll keep it going. You know, we're all at TalkSport 100% behind you. He's been a fantastic professional. And he just seems to keep going. Everybody we talk to, you know, can you believe? And they keep saying, like Luke Fletcher said there, "I've had a 13-year career. It'd be like going back to the start and doing it again." And he's still going. Phenomenal. Brilliant, Steve-O. Fantastic, man.
Did you know Harry Makepeace was a double international? He played 4 games of football for England as well as 4 test matches.
Wow, I didn't know. I didn't even know. To be fair, I didn't know who Harry Makepeace was. I thought he was an actor. I thought he was like an action film star, but no.
He slashed 1 6 over backward point. The ball was too close to him to cut, it seemed to me, and he just, I don't know. He just had sort of somehow managed to flick the wrists and just lashed it over backward point, flew away.
It's not a small ground either, St. Lawrence ground. I'm saying St. Lawrence ground's not a small ground at Canterbury. It's a decent-sized ground as well.
Just to conclude the match, Kent, 307. Glamorgan, 64 for 3 declared, so they did everything they could to make a game of it. Kent then added 60 for 1 to set up a target of 304. At what seemed to me, if I calculated the overs right, it was two teams really prepared to lose in order to try and win, but unfortunately the rain had the last word once again as Glamorgan finished 23 for 1. What a game. What a player. Not so at Northampton, where just 34 and a half overs were possible against Lancashire. Lancashire seemed to be being hit harder than anybody else by the weather in the last couple of rounds.
Yeah, it's normally at Old Trafford where you're struggling. When you leave as a Lancashire player, leave Lancashire, you're expecting to get your game in. But Jimmy Anderson will be disappointed with this one, because he was involved and he hasn't been able to get on the park, and that'll be a possible concern for England about Jimmy's body. And we've been there, man, as we've seen it in South Africa when he thought he was fit, playing the first test match, ruled out for the whole series. So that'll be a slight concern on that front, but be interesting to see if he plays in the Roses game this week. Not much happened in the game at Northampton. So I just wonder if Jimmy might ask the player possibly the first 2 days. If I was Jimmy Anderson, I'd be tempted to say, look, let me play in the first 2 days. I'll get a substitute because I think you can do that because of international call-up. Just to get a few overs under his belt on sort of Thursday or Friday morning, and then meet up with the squad. But apart from that, not a great deal happening.
Just before we break, one more question about Darren Stevens. He's out of contract at the end of this summer. Kent have let him go once already and said that, you know, thanks for your service. We're kind of forced to take him back because of through sheer weight of performance. Do you think they would dare not offer him another year?
Yeah, I think he might get... I'm sure there'll be an offer there for another year. I thought Steve O'Meara went back to Leicester a few years ago because obviously that's where he started, that's where he was from, but seems to be settled down. I like the golf down on the southeast coast. Look, I think he deserves a reward of another contract, and I think that would be the right thing for them to do. I'm sure they've had that conversation, and it's about whether Darren feels as though he can get out of bed of a morning and do it all again. But at this minute in time, you know, even at 45, he looks as though he deserves another year on his contract.
If they didn't offer him another year, how many offers do you think he'd get from other counties?
I think he'd get one or two. I don't think it would be everybody chasing him, but I think he'd get one or two, especially clubs that are looking to... Yeah, set good examples. And the one thing, if you're playing at 45, you set good examples. And he's certainly done that. So I'm sure he'll have one or two. As I said before, I was surprised that he didn't go back to Leicester, especially when Paul Nixon took over, because I thought Nico might have brought him back to sort of blend with the young players there. So I'm sure if Kent do relinquish the services of Darren Stevens, there will be one or two offers. And it'll be whether Darren Stevens really wants to go in and play and whether he wants to coach. He did say he's doing his coaching stuff. So the guy has got a lot of knowledge inside that head of his, played a lot of cricket, and I'm sure he'd be a valued member to somebody's coaching team.
The ECB say that they've had no formal request from the BCCI to reschedule the fifth and final test match so that they can accommodate the conclusion of the IPL. This is a really... really big story. It might turn out to be a non-story, but I suspect that won't happen. When the IPL was cancelled, we did a special cricket collective in which we spoke about the possible ramifications of the IPL concluding with 31 matches still to go. We spoke about how much money would be lost, in excess of £250 million if the tournament was not finished. We spoke about collateral damage, about everything right up to and including the Ashes being rescheduled in order for the IPL to be played, to reach its conclusion. And now we're beginning to see the first move from the IPL. There's been no formal request, but if you speak to the people at Old Trafford, they're a bit worried because in the BCCI are asking for that fifth test match to be moved at Old Trafford. They've already sold out the first 3 days. And I suspect the ECB are finding themselves in a very, very awkward situation, Harmy. They don't want to say no, but the cost of saying yes could be enormous.
Yeah, the cost of saying yes, I think that's the problem. And Old Trafford is a venue that, it's one of the best venues in the country for me, Old Trafford. Now, the way it looks, the way people support, it's one of the big earners, big hitters. And I think it would be very difficult to move it now. Is it the right thing? I find myself doing this job, sometimes criticising the way of, well, players have got to play for England over the IPL. And I still believe that. But I think in this COVID world, the way it is at this moment in time, I think that's out the window. I think you've got to be as flexible as you possibly can to accommodate everything, because what is the most important thing here now? It's a financial state of the game of cricket, not for India, not for England, not for Australia, but for the lesser, the sides who haven't got much money, you know, the ramifications on like South Africa or Bangladesh, or the money filters down. Eventually it does get down. The big lot get, that's fine. Now that's the way the game is at this minute in time. Some will argue it's not right, and I'll probably be one of them. But it's important that we are flexible to try and change just while this COVID's going on, to help accommodate and keep things moving. Because if we keep them moving, money is spent. And if money is spent, it eventually gets to everybody that needs it to keep this great game of ours flowing. And that's the most important thing. I think we have to be flexible. Can they do it? Not sure they can do it in this short space of time. So first 3 days are sold out, hotels and everything that's going. Security that goes with a test match. The people that, from working point of view and getting things in place, it's not as simple as just, well, we'll just move this forward a week. The logistics will be a nightmare. I think the ECB, yes, they're in such a hard place. Can they say no to the BCCI? That's the question. Has anybody got the guts to say no to the BCCI? Are the BCCI going to put England ECB in that position? That's another question. I don't think they would have a second thought, to be fair, because I think the BCCI, like you say, they more or less run the game. Not an arrogance, but it's a, you know, bring in this amount of money that filters down. So we want the biggest, you know, the biggest here. Has Tom Harris and Ashley Giles got it in them to turn around and say, nope, this is the program. This is where we are. We move. You might have to rethink what you're trying to do. But for me, I think it would be a big ask to move it now, this close. And we are too close to the fifth test match. And even though we haven't played a test match this summer, logistically, I think it'll be a nightmare.
Just to be clear, Ashley Giles has said that wherever the IPL is concluded, if it is concluded in the September-October window, the England players won't be involved because they are committed to a tour of Bangladesh. So what we're basically talking about here, I mean, look, 2009, Harmy, the BCCI said, was told by the Indian government that they couldn't hold the IPL in India because of local elections. So they said, we'll move it to South Africa. And it was beyond imaginable that they could do that. And it just moved this enormous tournament. But they did it. And, you know, the answer is, you know, if they have a problem, if they throw enough money at it, they solve it. So, I mean, if they say to Old Trafford, compensate all the people who bought tickets, compensate hotels, if they throw enough money at the problem, they say, look, here's $5 million. Here's $10 million. Just sort it. We need to finish this, because they're small amounts given the enormous revenue, the enormous value of the IPL. So if there is a will, there is the money to find a way.
Definitely. And I want the England players to play in it, but I don't want them to play. Well, I don't want the England players to play in it over playing test match cricket for England. And I think if they can be, like I said before, flexible as we can be, in logistic, in the, without being too much of a logistic nightmare, find a way of appeasing everybody, because the players want to play as well. You know, some of these players now have got 5, 6, 7 years, not only in the IPL, but with that franchise. And that franchise means something to them. You know, Rajasthan means something to Ben Oaks. You know, Josh Butler, all these players. You know, Owen Morgan's, he's captain now of KKR. It means something to them. It's not just a cash cow, give me some money and I'll go and play and try my best. The history of these franchises. So I think we've got to take that into consideration as well. Somehow they've got to find a window. And further down the line, has to be moved, i.e. even if it was to stomach the ashes for one year, it goes back a week. Think little things like that to help make sure that the biggest global tournament from a cash point of view has got the best names playing and it's at its best. The cricket world will see that is a brilliant, and it's a fantastic tournament. And I think it's more important that the best players playing in that, and then just try and move. If you move everything back, but within reason, you're not cancelling things. You're just trying to be as flexible as you possibly can until COVID goes, because it'll never, ever go fully disappear, but it goes into a manageable state. I think the goodwill of the cricket family will come together, because it's so important. And when I keep saying, and I mean this, I mean this, and I say it all the time when I go to local cricket clubs. There was, if the ECB lost so much money, like what South Africa potentially could go bankrupt because of the IPL not being on or whatever. And I keep saying to these cricket clubs, you look at them nets you've got grants for, them covers you've got grants for, you've got a fantastic roller now that you've got a grant for. That's all come from like ECB grant, Sport England money that's been earned and getting from international cricket. And it filters down eventually to where it's to be. And if we start losing because of arrogance of, well, we bang this drum and we look after this and we got to have the IPL and forget the rest of you, then cricket will be in a sorry, sorry state. So it's important that for the next 12 months, 18 months, wherever, that we are as flexible as we possibly can within reason and making sure that the big tournaments, cash tournaments, are played so the money can filter down to the people that need it the most. And that is grassroots cricket. It's emerging nations. It's everything that goes with it. So if there's a chance, you know, we've got to try and finish the IPL as the IPL is, the best players playing against the best players and a great tournament. And if other international games have to be moved to accommodate that, I think we have to try and do that because we've seen, and I've changed my stance on it, we've seen how much money this IPL gives to the world game, and it's so important that we get it.
I did say that we would hear from Kane Williamson. So before we run out of time, the Black Caps captain was asked what he thought about England's rest and rotation policy. And Williamson said that it was perfectly understandable.
I know they've got a lot of test cricket coming up, starting, I think, with us and then India and Australia and the five test match series. So I suppose for them, and we try to do the same when we know there's a huge volume of cricket, you need to manage that as best you can. Look, they're world-class players, but they do have a huge amount of depth, and a lot of world-class players are in that squad. So, you know, that's a credit to the cricket that's been played here in the UK, and yeah, the amount of talented players that are getting opportunities and putting their hands up for opportunities. So we know we're going to be up against a really tough challenge come the first test.
That was Kane Williamson saying pretty much what you would expect him to say. And finally, a couple of small items, not small for Boyd Rankin. He announced his retirement from international cricket, having played for both Ireland and England. And the Pakistan Super League has announced that they've confirmed logistics and arrangements to finish their own tournament in the UAE. You know, years ago, Harmy, when Dubai and Abu Dhabi built those cricket stadiums, I wasn't the only one that thought, when are they ever going to be used? Who on earth is going to play in them? They've got more cricket in the last couple of years than anywhere else in the world.
They're now the most important cricket grounds in the world now, because it just seems like the only place COVID's not took a massive, massive hit in effect. I've been to both grounds and played in both grounds, and they're fantastic stadiums. It's a fantastic place to go and visit and go and play. And I think the Pakistan Super League is probably a little bit of an audition to get the facilities right. Can we get the COVID rules secure? Can we make sure that everything's ready for what potentially could be IPL? And then probably the World T20, because I can only see the World T20 happening in the UAE. I can't see it happening in India now. So it's good to see them back. Congratulations to Big Boyd on a fantastic career. You know, great man, good, solid guy, good professional. Problems with injuries, did well for England, fantastic for Ireland, and good luck with his retirement.
Indeed, echo that. You've been listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast now, available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week for a preview of England's Test Series with New Zealand. In the meantime, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.